Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. As nuclear fear spreads as a result of the earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear plant partial meltdown in Japan, here's the latest word we have on how that fear is spreading. This is from the AP just a few minutes ago. China on Thursday urged Japan to provide prompt, precise information about its nuclear crisis in a bid to control a flurry of rumors sweeping the entire region about possible dangers. Worried shoppers stripped stores of iodized salt in Beijing and Shanghai and other parts of China on Thursday in the false belief that it either wards off radiation injuries or that the nation's supply would be contaminated by fallout from a crippled Japanese nuclear power plant. Experts have said the first rumor is not true and the second is unlikely. Any catastrophe at the Japanese nuclear plant would most likely affect the immediate area, and wind patterns usually blow away from China at this time of the year. The rumors are part of a swirl of misinformation crisscrossing the region in the wake of Japan's nuclear emergency. The latest from that scene is that they have apparently concluded the firefighting efforts for the night, or the cool down efforts for the night, and they are hoping to be able to hook up electricity. It was the loss of electricity in the first place that disabled the cooling systems, which led to the nuclear problems that we've been seeing. So that's the latest on some of the details. Meanwhile, Japan's faceless 50 are being mythologized in the press, the heroes working tirelessly and potentially sacrificing their lives, or at least their health, to prevent radiation leaks at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. But it's we Americans who are most curious about their names, their stories, and their faces, while the Japanese media seem much less concerned about connecting personally to those workers. What does this say about the two cultures? How else is Japan's national culture informing the emergency response? Linda Lowen is here to talk about it with us. She's the head of the About.com Women's Issues Guide, and she's been writing pieces for the site as a Japanese-American since the crisis. Linda, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Seems if this story were happening in the U.S., we'd already know the 50 nuclear workers' names. We'd have interviewed their kids and grandparents and high school sweethearts. Is that happening in the Japanese media?
No, it seems to be very low key over there. The one piece that the U.S. media has latched onto is a woman who, first I heard that she was talking to her husband via cell phone, then I saw on CNN it might have come across in an email, but basically she had a short conversation with him, and he said, you know, take care of yourself, and you know, he said, I'll be working here for a while. So it almost bordered on a conversation that one might have between a husband and wife in a typical day at the office. And this may seem extraordinary to us, but this is really quite typical for Japan, at least my experiences as a Japanese American.
What's the larger context of that attitude?
The larger context is that the Japanese are very reserved, and I saw this growing up. I would look through photo albums that my mother had. My mother was born and raised in Osaka, met and married my American father in Japan, and came to the States, where she lived for 47 years until she passed away 5 years ago. But in looking at all of her photo albums, everybody had dour faces, whether or not they were candid pictures or formal shots in front of sightseeing, you know, spots. And I always used to say, why doesn't anybody smile? And she would say to me very cryptically, that's not the Japanese way. And it took me a very long time to understand the reserve of the Japanese, and that privacy is a big issue. You don't intrude on other people's lives. And part of it has to do with the fact that it's a very different culture in that it's a very small island. I don't think people are aware that Japan is about the size of Montana, and yet it's a very densely populated island. I mean, there are 10 cities, I believe, in Japan that number over 1 million in population. Mm-hmm. You know, compare that to the U.S., where there are 9 cities over a million, and think about how packed it would be. You have to have a very strong sense of you know, personal space and privacy, and not intrude on others to maintain that kind of society.
You heard the AP story I just read on China joining the chorus now of calling for more information to be released about what's really going on. Apparently, a lot of Japanese people don't trust the information they're getting either from the power company or from the government at this point. So is the energy company also trying to protect the workers' privacy in order to save face and put out the appearance that everything is under control, even if it isn't?
I'm not sure if they have any concern about the workers, but you're right. You do hit upon something when you talk about saving face. It's significant in Japan that you not humiliate or embarrass your workplace, your business, your employer. And I think that they're stuck in a very difficult situation that I don't think typically happens in Japan. I think American corporations have a whole lot of resources to turn to in terms of crisis management. I mean, immediately when something goes wrong, you call in an expert. I don't think that culture is really there in Japan. So they are really at wit's end as to how to deal with it. I don't think that they are questioned by the Japanese media in the same way they're questioned by the American media. I saw a government official talking to Anderson Cooper last night, and he was just grilling the guy, and the Japanese official remained very polite, very nice, but didn't really say anything.
Gosh, a government official being grilled and being very nice and not really saying anything. I heard that somewhere before.
Maybe you have, but you know what?
Maybe that's a universal thing that ties all human beings.
Extract the politeness, Ryan. Extract the politeness.
Maybe. Listeners, we have a few minutes for phone calls for Linda Lowen, and particularly looking for people who are Japanese or Japanese-American or have deep ties to Japan in some way. Any cultural differences that you see in the reaction to this suite of emergencies that is tragically taking place over there compared to what might be going on in the United States? What is particularly Japanese here that matters for good or ill? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you would like to add your voice. And call right up and you'll get right on because we just have a few minutes. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You're primarily a women's issues writer, I should mention, and only recently did you start writing as a Japanese American. What prompted you?
I thought to myself, I can probably work this in the angle of this was a relationship between my mother and myself. So mother-daughter relationships are significant in terms of how they impact women's lives. But it also, I also thought to myself, many people regarded my mother as a tiny, cute little woman. I mean, she was maybe 4'10 and weighed all of 95 pounds. But she survived World War II. She was a teenager at the time and told me many stories of hardship. I mean, she didn't talk about the war, and most of those who survived the war don't. But, you know, I compare that to a piece that they're showing on CNN about an 83-year-old woman. Everybody's making such a fuss because she heard about the tsunami warning. She heard the sirens go off. So what did she do? She jumped on her bike and she pedaled away. We think this is an extraordinary thing. And we look at the Japanese people and, oh, they're so small and so gracious. They are tough. She was one tough cookie, my mother, and I saw a lot of her in the 83-year-old woman who rode away on a bicycle and saved herself from the tsunami.
You know, we have some calls coming in. I'm not even going to take them because they're from non-Japanese people who say, oh, Japanese people don't show any emotion. Oh, I know a Japanese person who smiles. You know, is there a risk in doing this kind of cultural analysis, even by you as a Japanese American, of stereotyping your own people?
You know, that's part of the reason why I hesitated for so long about writing about this. But I think that there are some misunderstandings. And the whole idea is that in Japan, children are socialized from a very early age to put the group first, that individuality is discouraged to some extent, and that you need to realize that everybody needs to pull together to work for the group. And there is a reason for this. I mean, the size of the island, the compactness of living there, and also, too, you know, what it took to survive World War II and to come back from nothing to become, for many years, they were the, you know, the second strongest economy in the world. That doesn't come from individual effort, as in I, me, my. It comes from collaborative effort, and that's what the Japanese do. And if they sacrifice a little bit, at least in terms of the way Americans view them, it's what they needed to do to thrive.
Elizabeth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you for talking about this. My grandmother is from Japan, and it's making me crazy to hear the media just say, oh, we're so amazed at how helpful they're being. We're so amazed that they're so resilient and organized. And then to be upset about the sort of saving face and being hush-hush about the nuclear fallout problem. And it's just, these people, it's a different culture. My grandmother was around during the war. She doesn't talk about it. She went through hard things, and it's just about being proud and humble and respectful. And I just feel like it's so frustrating when the American and British media make it sound like these people are some sort of, I don't know, aliens or something, that this is the way they act. So
Linda, you want to talk to Elizabeth?
Oh, Elizabeth, we could talk for hours. You know, that's exactly it. The Japanese are very, very private. And this is a country in which, you know, if the Fukushima 50 were here in the United States, you'd believe that the wives and the neighbors would be calling every media outlet available to say, hey, interview me, I'll talk about it. And that just doesn't, you know, it doesn't even enter into the mind of a Japanese individual.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, that's something to admire and respect and be proud of. They're not attention seekers. They do good work, and they just don't expect anything in return. That's how the culture works.
Elizabeth, thank you for your call.
No, thank you so much.
You also say, Linda, that Japan is accustomed to preparing for disaster and steel to endure hardship. You mentioned World War II. It obviously comes to some degree from the memories of that. And, of course, there are people alive today who have lived through that, like Elizabeth's grandmother. Also, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. How do you think that informs the response to this nuclear crisis?
You know, I myself have been surprised, because I think that the whole nuclear issue is a very sensitive and touchy subject for the Japanese. It's very, very difficult. And you know, I see it from both ends. I've always heard growing up the Americans say, well, we needed to end the war quickly to save American lives. But when you drop one bomb and you realize the devastating effects, and you continue to drop another bomb, it's somewhat chilling. I also know my mother talked about how her older brother was believed to have been in Hiroshima when they dropped the first bomb. So she and her father immediately set out on foot to try to find him. And in the perimeter, I mean, you know, even before they reached much devastation, it was very hard going. And my mother was tired, and she wanted to stop and drink some water. And they didn't know anything about nuclear fallout radiation at the time. But her father said to her, "Don't drink that water. Don't drink that water. I think we have to turn around and go back home." And when they did return home, he was there. But she talked a little bit about what she saw. And you know, just once, I mean, she, as Elizabeth said, they don't talk about the war, but clearly it touched her. To her final days, whenever she heard an air raid siren on the radio or on television or depicted in a movie, she literally put her hands over her ears, and she ran out of the room. She couldn't bear the sound.
Cass on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cass.
Hi. I just wanted to comment about the Japanese government not releasing the names of those employees.
Yes.
After the World War II, with the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, people who were exposed to the radiation and the people in the radiation sickness, and even their children and grandchildren are being discriminated or ostracized. So I was feeling that maybe they don't want to be stigmatized by, you know, being released the name and the family member being exposed to that kind of news.
What do you think about that, Linda?
You know, Cass, you're absolutely right. I think that it's hard for us to understand in the States that people could be stigmatized for it. But it's true. I mean, we see these as heroic actions. But in Japan, you know, there is that fear. There's that lingering fear that stays from World War II. And I think that we have to be very careful when we make judgments about what's going on over in Japan and how authorities are behaving, how the power company is behaving, how the media is behaving.
We certainly, and Cass, thank you. We're just about out of time. We certainly saw the heroism of Americans on 9/11, so many people willing to rush toward the disaster scene, knowing they were taking health risks and risking their lives in various ways by going to help and then staying and working on the rubble on the pile for weeks and months after that. Is there anything that's particularly Japanese about the willingness of these 50 to go inside the nuclear plant? I know we could find 50 Americans to do it if it was the same situation.
Well, I think that they may take a very pragmatic approach. I heard that a 59-year-old gentleman said he would go in because he was aware that he didn't have that much life left as compared to others. You know, the Japanese may do it out. I'm not discounting their heroism, but I think that they remain and they work because they do it out of a sense of duty. This is what you do for your employer. Americans may rush in because they have that unique sense of heroism and that sort of superhero, you know, I really want to save lives. The impulse is there for both. But I think that the culture may provide different messages about why that's the right thing to do.
Linda Lowen is the head of the About.com Women's Issues Guide. She's been writing pieces for the site as a Japanese-American since this crisis began. Thank you so much for having this conversation. I know a lot of our Japanese-American listeners and others really, really appreciated it.
Thank you for recognizing the value of having it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, census watcher Sam Roberts, who's coming on with us every Thursday this month as they unfold the census 2010 figures. Today we're going to talk about why the rise of the Hispanic population is exceeding expectations and yet doesn't always translate into the rise of Hispanic power. Stay with us.